presidential candidate. Of course, hardly anyone knows of her. The mainstream media has ignored her to an extreme degree. We've covered a good bit of her work from time to time. And I guess I still need to do some form of disclaimer that there is no intention, either expressed or implied, to suggest that WSHC 89.7 Shepherd University or the Shepherd University Board of Governors is responsible for what may or may not happen. I'm going to play some videos from Bashtag TV. I think they will work. And again, I will include myself in my own disclaimer this time, because while these have won videos, I think that most of what they have I would go along with. But if you've followed some of the stuff I've done, a lot of it is just simply more disinformation. But yes, we have to figure out what to sort from this mess. But one interesting thing I came across, also from Breastcheck TV, is a very interesting video. I suggest you find it. You probably haven't seen it, but it is a Michael Jackson video. I was very surprised to see it, and here's the commentary about it. Now that the hoopla around Michael Jackson's death has subsided, I have one question. Have you ever seen a 50-year-old individual who was both a serious lifelong drug addict and a superbly conditioned athlete? Rehearsal footage before he died showed he was still fighting fit, and of course he was about to embark on a 50 performance program in an arena that holds 23,000 people. But every news story emphasizes what an out-of-control pill popper he was. What's wrong with this picture? Michael Jackson's untimely death, and then the untimely, the un, is in parentheses. So you can kind of see what they're going with that. Okay, loading it. And a convenient death. It's been stated that Michael Jackson was a serious drug addict. The details that have been related are quite horrific, and it sounds like he consumed the contents of entire pharmacies. Okay, but at age 50, the man was healthy enough to be preparing for a series of 50 live shows in a venue that can hold up to 23,000. Have you ever danced all night? Have you ever danced all night 50 nights in front of thousands of people? Have you ever danced at Michael Jackson's level? Videos of rehearsals shot just before he died indicate that Jackson could still move well. No one who was anything less than a superbly conditioned athlete could have pulled off the series of performances he was about to embark on. That's not to say that Jackson was not an athlete with a drug problem, but is it possible that the severity of his drug problem might have been exaggerated just a tad? How many serious drug abusers do you know who at the age of 50 could set out on a program like this? The reason I ask, have you ever seen the prison version of the music video for his song, They Don't Really Care About Us? I confess I never have until recently. The way it portrayed the world, it could have been a promo for Alex Jones's Prison Planet website. We're not trying to promote him, but you know, I guess it fits. Clearly, before he died, Jackson had made a definite shift from pure entertainment to entertainment with a strong social statement component, and his commentary was not flattering to the powers that be. It must be a great relief to those who don't want the pot stirred that Jackson accidentally, coincidentally, and conveniently died because of his ghastly addiction to drugs right before he was primed to explode again on the world scene. Funny how life works, isn't it? And Michael Jackson, They Don't Care About Us.
Enough is enough for the start.
video you won't see on the endless retrospectives, Michael Jackson, they don't really care about us. And it was very interesting once I saw that, and you need to see it. Gave me a whole lot more respect for the man. Now, my idea that I was going to do for this program, and I think I may very well have Ms. McKinney calling us up, although she just suffered a rather tragic loss in her family, so, you know, if she can't, I certainly will understand. And what was the idea I heard? Some of the best performances are lost into heaven. Okay. Well, my idea was psychological warfare. This is Psychological Warfare Day. And, you know, have gone over that story in a tremendous amount from all different kinds of angles. One of these brass tick TVs, actually, I found something on psychological warfare. It was rather, it was pretty awful, as psychological warfare is. It was a lady who was going through her own accounts, and it was rather detailed, and it went on, and I thought that that might be a good subject for today. I might apply that at some point, but my old backup partners, Brass Check TV, they have an offering for today, which I don't use the term 9/11. It's insane. We've never had a date referred to in that way. Yes, the terrorist events of 11 September 01 made simple. There's nothing simple about murder, let alone the murder of over 3,000 people. But there are some simple, if highly censored, facts about the events of 11 September 21. Here's what a selection of engineers, physicists, military intelligence experts, and eyewitnesses have to say about the U.S. news media's government-sanctioned 9/11 story. And then again, I do want to reiterate that, especially when it gets into some of the ones I tried to see this, I just got in here, but some of the content, of course, I don't agree with. As we've gone on, you can go to the site of Dr. Judy Wood, or go to Dr. Judy Wood. Hopefully we'll be talking with her again. Just drjudywood.com. Andrew Johnson, thank him for speaking with us last week about crop circles. He'll be having a conference in a couple days in the UK. And but it starts off plainly and simply. And again, of course, certainly there were, I'm not saying that there was no controlled demolition, certainly there were aspects of controlled demolition. But then, of course, the resultant lack of debris is undeniable. And of course, the point of this program is, again, it is to uncover the truth, to honor the people that were murdered. The truth needs to come out, okay? And of course, it has come out. It came out instantly. And oh boy, you know, this is where, you know, this story is just so huge. And over the past almost 6 years, I have covered quite a bit of it. And at this point, the subject could not even begin to be broached in 2 hours. But basic details are there and beg to be looked at. Okay, this is a Fox News bit of this series of videos, and I might come in with commentary from time to time. I don't know, but possibly Cynthia McKinney in an hour or half an hour, she'll call us up, and that will be interesting. We'll have to talk about her. She was a six-term congresswoman in Georgia. There were Republican shenanigans that got her booted out, and she got back, but really, though, there is no difference between Republican and Democrat. You know, my God, I actually was listening to Mr. Limbo today, who that might be, I don't know. But, and actually, of course, in talking about Mr. Barack Obama, who is actually Barry Satoru, an illegal alien, who actually has no constitutional warrant to be called the president, as he is not the president. And we had a program about Obamacrimes.com, who was the lawyer, the former attorney general of the state of Pennsylvania, lifelong member of the NAACP, and here I go, just rambling and bumbling. This story is just absurdly large. But at any rate, Brass Check TV.
I want to get quickly to Chris Kanicki. He's a photographer with the Pittsburgh affiliate, a Fox affiliate. He was back there just a couple of minutes ago. And Chris, I've seen the pictures. It looks like there's nothing there except for a hole in the ground.
Basically, that's right. The only thing you could see from where we were was a big gouge in the earth and some broken trees. We could see some people walking around in the area, but from where we could see, there wasn't much left.
Any large pieces of debris at all?
No, there was nothing that you could distinguish that a plane had crashed there.
Smoke, fire?
Nothing. It was absolutely quiet. It was actually very quiet. Nothing going on down there. No smoke, no fire. Just a couple of people walking around. They look like part of the NTSB crew walking around looking at the pieces.
How big would you say that hole was?
From my estimates, I would guess it was probably about 20 to 15 feet. Long and probably about 10 feet long or 10 feet wide.
What could you see on the ground, if anything, other than dirt and ash? And
you couldn't see anything. You could just see dirt, ash, and people walking around, broken trees.
From my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. The only site is the actual site of the building that's crashed in. And as I said, the only pieces left that you can see are small enough that you could pick up in your hand. There are no large tail sections, wing sections, a fuselage, nothing like that anywhere around, which would indicate that the entire plane crashed into the side of the Pentagon and then caused the side to collapse. Now, even though if you look at the pictures of the Pentagon, you see that the floors have all collapsed, that didn't happen immediately. It wasn't until almost about 45 minutes later that the structure was weakened enough that all of the floors.
I am Major General Albert Stubblebine. I am retired Army Major General. In my last assignment, my last command, I was responsible for all of the Army's strategic intelligence forces around the world. I had responsibility for the signals intelligence, photo intelligence, counterintelligence, human intelligence. They all belonged to me in my last assignment. I was supposed to find out what the enemy was doing before the enemy did it so that we could take action against the enemy. That's intelligence, okay? Before the fact. So we always, always rely not on a single piece of data before we make a statement, but on multiple. And the more pieces of data that you have that correlate, the better you know exactly what is going on. So I have had a lot of experience in looking at photographs. I have looked at many, many different kinds of photographs from many, many different platforms on many, many different countries around the world.
Okay, so on September the 11th in 2001, what hit the Pentagon?
I don't know exactly what hit it, but I do know from the photographs that I have analyzed and looked at very, very carefully, it was not an airplane.
What made you believe that?
Well, for one thing, if you look at the hole that was made in the Pentagon, the nose penetrated far enough so that there should have been wing marks on the walls of the Pentagon. I have been unable to find those wing marks. So where were they? Did this vessel, vehicle, or whatever it was, have wings? Apparently not, because if it had had wings, they would have made marks on the side of the Pentagon. One person counteracted my theory and said, oh, well, you've got it all wrong. And the reason that it's wrong is that as the airplane came across, wing tipped down and hit the ground and broke off. I said, fine, that's possible. One wing could have broken off. But if I understand airplanes correctly, most airplanes have two wings. I haven't met an airplane with only one wing. So where was the mark for the second wing? okay, one broke off. There should have been a mark for the second wing. I could not find that in any of the photographs that I've analyzed. Now, I've been very careful to not say what went in there. Why? Because you don't have that evidence. I've never believed it was an airplane since I'd looked at the photographs. Up until that time I looked at the photographs, I accepted what was being said. After I looked at it, no way. We pride ourselves with the free press. I do not believe the free press is free anymore. It's very expensive. It's very expensive. And the press is saying what they have been told to say about this. Now, do I have proof of that? No. But I believe that stories that were told about 9/11 were false. I mean, you take a look at the buildings falling down. They didn't fall down because airplanes hit them. They fell down because of explosives went off inside. Demolition. Look at Building 7, for God's sakes. It didn't fall down to its side. It didn't fall this direction or that direction. Just like the two towers. When you look at the temperatures that you can create with fuel in a gas tank or a fuel tank of an airplane, and then you investigate the amount of heat that it would be required to melt the superstructure of the buildings, that came tumbling down. When you put all of that together, the one thing that shows, it does not match the facts. What is it they do not want the public to know?
Okay, this next one is Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which I guess, he points out that there were aspects of controlled demolition, obviously, but it was not the be-all and end-all of what happened. Oh, very cool. Andrew is recording the program, so it is being recorded in the UK. So that's interesting. I wound up being able to record after all. Okay, very good. Thank you, Andrew. But he is, he says, okay, just did a show with Dr. Wood. We'll send a link around shortly. I'm leaving you to recording now, but I'm just so tired. I'll have to go to bed. Well, thank you very much, Andrew. Who? Yes, actually what I wanted to do, I guess I'll play this Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which has an airplane in their logo, which I think is the point of Alex Jones and his communication network, because he wants you to believe in airplanes in New York. Now, of course, obviously, if you take about 2 seconds, researching it, there is no evidence. You know, a 10-foot by 16-foot hole in the Pentagon. There is no evidence in Shanksville, a tiny little hole. A retired officer, job for the Air Force was investigating aircraft wrecks, said he thought that somebody dug a hole, buried some trash, and blew it up. And that's how this Brass Check TV thing just started. The live Fox News report, the reporter saying that there was no wreckage. Well, if a Boeing is going to wreck, it's going to leave some wreckage. And then, of course, the absurd story about at the Pentagon, whatever did hit it, did a 270-degree turn around the Pentagon instead of just crashing into it, and it hit that spot, and of course the bank angle that it had to go through would have been aerodynamically impossible for a Boeing to do. And then of course the fake video in New York, just please watch the videos. Some of the videos have the black blob artifact of a, which we're supposed to believe is a plane, and then the in plain sight video, the ghost plane kind of disappearing into the building with a no crumpling. It's really absurd. So I think what I'm going to do is go to Brass Check TV and find the testimony. Kenny Johanneman, who saw the buildings explode out of nowhere, and that was his testimony. And there were quite a few people that saw the buildings explode out of nowhere. Brass Chick TV, you go to the 9/11 files, there is one section that says all the planes were make-believe, but then of course the most of that you're going to have to see it. It's not really going to relate at all on the radio. But let's see where here he is. Key 9/11 witness commits, quote, suicide. We've read this before quite a few times, actually. It was reported in the Daily News as absurd, supposed suicide note. It's just ridiculous. I won't read this, but it's a one-minute commentary. And again, rest in peace, Kenny Johanneman.
We should be able to hear what this man is saying now.
Anything else that you saw? Were you there for the second hit by the plane?
Yeah, about 10 minutes later, the second building went off.
Did you see it?
Yes, I saw it. It just blew up. A big explosion. People started running. It was just chaos everywhere. People jumping out. People just kept jumping and jumping and jumping. And you could still see they were alive because they were flailing around.
The FBI has already stepped in to investigate. It could be possibly a terrorist strike.
It could be. It could be because it was the first one went off, and then 10 minutes later, this just blew up out of nowhere.
Hard to think that that would just be accidental.
No, I don't think it would be accidental.
Back it up, folks. Back it up.
Kenny
Johanneman.
Spell your name.
Johanneman.
And you were working there?
Yes, I was right there. I was in the I was down in the basement. Came down. All of a sudden, the elevator blew up. Smoke. I dragged the guy out. His skin was hanging off. And I dragged him out. And I helped him out of the ambulance.
Thank you. Right.
And of course, that same identical story was parroted by William Rodriguez, who is quite obviously part of the rather massive cover-up of this insanity. Kenny Johanneman, yes, try to remember that name. Then, of course, the Brass Check TV. Yes, I just... so much of this. I guess we'll continue on with the, the architects for 9/11 truth. Oh, God. Well... at least they point out that it couldn't be the effects of a little bit of kerosene in a hollow aluminum tube.
AIA, I've been a practicing architect for 20 years, and I'm a member of the American Institute of Architects. Let's take a look at World Trade Center 7 now. It was 47 stories tall, what would have been the tallest building in 33 of our states. It was not hit by an airplane. Let's take a look at the evidence of World Trade Center 7 and see how it stacks up against the typical features of a controlled demolition, starting with, is there a sudden onset of destruction? Let's listen to this emergency word.
We were watching the building actually because it was on fire. The bottom floors of the building were on fire, and we heard this sound that sounded like a clap of thunder. Turned around, we were shocked to see that the building was it looked like there was a shock wave ripping through the building, and the windows all busted out. And it was horrifying. And then about a second later, the bottom floor caved out. And the building followed after that, and we saw the building crash down all the way to the ground.
Do we have a straight down symmetrical collapse into the building's footprint? Let's listen to Dan Rather narrate this collapse for us as we take our first look at the collapse of Building 7.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately...
Oh, and also remember, you can find the BBC reported this building coming down a full 23 minutes before it did. The presenter in London says the Solomon Brothers building has fallen down or whatever, and it wasn't hit by a plane, but it fell down because it was weakened by falling debris. And then, of course, the lady, the presenter in New York, basically says the same thing, and the building can be seen directly over her left shoulder. So, yes, I believe.
Believe, you must believe.
Destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
Let's take a look in this side-by-side comparison with a known controlled demolition on the right. Did the building fall into its own footprint? Pretty much so. Do we have demolition waves? And how do these remove the column support? Well, here's a floor plan of Building 7. Now, to bring a building smoothly, symmetrically, into its own footprint without falling over, what we have to do is remove the core columns, because what we want to do is bring the outside of the building in on itself. Now, this involves a high degree of precision that fire is not capable of. Do we have a free fall speed of collapse through the path of greatest resistance? You can see, second by second, the building gaining downward momentum. You can plot the drop distance on a graph of time, and it fits the free fall curve almost perfectly. What does this mean? That the columns had to have been removed, and removed virtually simultaneously on each floor, synchronistically timed, so the building had no resistance virtually on the way down. Do we have a total dismemberment of the steel structure? We had a 47-story skyscraper compressed to 4 stories. Do we have sounds of explosions, though? How about Kevin McPadden?
This was a boom, and like you felt a rumble in the ground, like almost like you wanted to grab onto something. That, to me, I knew that was an explosion. There was no doubt in my mind.
Do we have enormous clouds of pyroclastic smoke from the pulverized concrete? Watch the concrete entrained in the air racing down every street in each direction at 35 miles an hour. Do we have pools of molten iron? Here is Building 7 at A and B, and here is the North Tower and the South Tower. These hot spots are 1340 to 1370 degrees. These are the temperatures of the hottest office fires. There was no fire on the surface of Ground Zero after the collapses. What are we measuring here? We're measuring the molten metal that was seen by these first responders. Let's listen to John Gross, lead engineer of NIST, tell us about the molten metal from his perspective.
First of all, let's go back to your basic premise that there was a pool of molten steel. I know of absolutely nobody, and there's no eyewitness who said so, nobody who's produced it.
You'd get down below and you'd see molten steel, molten steel running down the channel rails, like you're in a foundry.
Mm-hmm.
Like lava.
No eyewitness who said so.
There actually melted beams where it was molten steel that was being dug out.
No eyewitness who said so.
Underground, it was still so hot that molten metal dripped on the sides of a wall.
Nobody who's produced it.
What is the problem here? Somebody's lying. I'm going to leave it up to you to make your own conclusions. How about chemical evidence, though? What produced all this molten metal? And what is thermite, anyway?
Thermite. An incendiary used by the military, thermite is a compound of iron oxide and aluminum, which when ignited sustains an extreme heat reaction, creating molten iron. In just 2 seconds, thermite can reach temperatures over 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit, quite enough to liquefy steel.
Dr. Stephen Jones performed chemical analysis on the previously molten metal. Dr. Jones received no less than 4 separate samples of World Trade Center dust, some of it from Jeanette McKinley's apartment across the street, where the windows blew in and filled her apartment with dust. Another sample was found like 10 minutes later on the Brooklyn Bridge. Well, he takes this and he puts a magnet over it, and he finds that there are small particles that come up to the magnet. Some of them are angular. Some of them are round. They look like this. If you had thousands of cutter charges going off in the columns and beams throughout the building, and they were under this incredible pressure, what you'd see is something like this. Tens of thousands or millions of tiny droplets. What's the shape of those droplets? When a liquid is dispersed like this, its surface tension forms itself into almost a perfect sphere. Would there possibly be any unignited thermite pieces in the World Trade Center dust? Indeed, he finds it. It also comes up to the magnet from his dust samples. Many chips. This one, a 16th of an inch long, red on one side, gray on the other. The red side is composed of tiny iron oxide particles and aluminum. The Lawrence Livermore lab came out with papers about this stuff. The particles being so small allow for almost instantaneous ignition between the two chemicals, the aluminum and the iron oxide, producing very explosive results. He continues his study and finds additional chips that are partially ignited with spheres embedded in them. With Dr. Jones and his small team of scientists, through EDS, XRF, and WDS, identifies the components of these spheres and chips, predominantly iron, along with aluminum, oxygen, silicon, 1,3-diphenylpropane. The results, coupled with the visual evidence, he says, at the scene, such as the flowing hot liquid metal, providing compelling evidence that thermite reaction compounds were deliberately placed in both World Trade Center towers and Building 7. These results are documented in a peer-reviewed journal. Let's listen to what FEMA did conclude, because it is interesting. Evidence of a severe high-temperature corrosion attack on the steel, including rapid oxidation, sulfidation, and subsequent intergranular melting. Very interesting. Remember, office fires don't melt steel. What melted this steel? Capable of turning a solid steel girder into Swiss cheese, like this former wide flange column from the structural steel in Building 7. Now, they document this very carefully in their Appendix C. I believe we've shown that Building 7 matches all of the features of controlled demolition in the classic sense. Thank you so very much.
Oh, God. That's ridiculous. Of course, we know that hollow aluminum tubes with some kerosene can make steel vanish. Happens all the time. And I think, what's the next one here? I was going to play something from the X-Files, I think it is. What's the next one? Oh, David Lynch. This is a little bit of a interview. Someplace in Europe. It's probably Dutch. But anyway, X-Files 9/11. The strange with all the reporting about 9/11 that no one in the mainstream media happened to notice that one of the most popular television programs on TV featured this scenario just 6 months before it happened. Is this about increasing arms sales? And a whole lot more. So it's just an interesting coincidence. Remember that that's all we are dealing with here is interesting coincidences. Okay. It's brief.
What is scenario 12D? We know it's a war game scenario, that it has to do with airline counterterrorism. Why is that important enough to kill for?
Because it's no longer a game.
But if some terrorist group wants to act out this scenario, why target you for assassination?
Depends on who your terrorists are.
The men who conceived of it in the first place. You're saying our government plans to commit a terrorist act against a domestic airline?
There you go. Indicting the entire government, as usual. It's a faction. A small faction.
For what possible gain?
The Cold War's over, John. But with no clear enemy to stockpile against, the arms market's flat. But bring down a fully loaded 727 into the middle of New York City, and you'll find a dozen tin pot dictators all over the world just clamoring to take responsibility and begging to be smart bombed.
I can't believe it. This is about increasing arms sales.
Mm-hmm.
When?
Tonight.
How are you going to stop them? Why didn't you tell the world this? Go to the press.
You think I'd still be drawing breath 30 minutes after I made that call? The press? Who's going to run this story?
We would.
This? This is birdcage liner. wild-eyed crap right up there with Elvis is an alien and two-headed babies.
You obviously read it.
Don't be so damn naive.
Yes, Elvis just got off a UFO and had a two-headed baby. Okay, this is an interesting clip. Melted and twisted cars, a firefighter just coming out from Ground Zero. And the question is, how does a falling building melt cars? Dr. Wood has exhaustively documented this. We have melted and twisted cars a mile from Ground Zero. And rather odd. But you got to look at it. You got to look at the evidence. Check it for yourself or believe the sacred story.
We've been dividing up all the duties here, and he's been down to the scene. And also, J.D. Halperin, who said he's just a volunteer who came in from California and was around the area. I just wanted to know, how much fire is there? You said you were just at Ground Zero. How much fire is left?
Well, the
actually, it's
Building 7, there was no fire there whatsoever.
WSHC Shepherdstown, interviews 29 for the 11th of September. And, of course, there is no intention to suggest the Shepherd University Board of Governors is responsible for this program.
However, but there was one truck putting water on the building, but it's collapsed completely. And then the other building, that there were some flames still coming up, was in World Trade Center 1, but not a lot.
And you said you saw melted tour buses, melted cars?
The cars that were right down there, it was just unbelievable. They were twisted and melted into nothing. The debris is just unbelievable. And then you can see fire trucks and police vehicles that were down there early, that all their windows, the windshields, are completely blown out from, must have been from when debris dropped.
Yes, he was grasping at the explanations, but also in these pictures you see the windows blown out without debris on them. Another interesting coincidence. So this is David Lynch, and it's a brief interview for people who care to go into the highly censored background story. That's another one, but let me see what's going on with that and play this one.
No, but it is a theory of conspiracy. There also are conspiracy theories of huge proportions. And you suggested we show a part of a clip of the documentary Loose Change by Dylan Avery. And it was a film that has been watched by 10 million viewers because you could see it through the internet. No charge. And it is the film sums up in a way that all the theories about U.S. government having planned the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center. Let's first watch it.
In all the videos of the collapses, explosions can be seen bursting from the building 20 to 30 stories below the demolition wave. Here. 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 Here.
I think what's more interesting is when you watch the videos of the fake blob of the plane coming out the other side of the building completely intact.
And here.
You know, once you see these videos, and some of the videos have the, obviously, the black blob.
Sorry, it was filming her documentary.
You know, would look like a plane.
The first 24 hours and caught.
Remember the plane that ditched in the Hudson? And then when Barry Satoro's plane buzzed the Statue of Liberty.
Tripod shakes 12
seconds. What was that? They look like planes, and they go very slowly, because big planes like that cannot fly at cruise altitude. They cannot fly at cruise speed at 700 feet above ground level. It's just plain physics.
You're probably asking, if there were bombs in the building, how would they get in there without anyone noticing?
Whenever this evidence is presented to people, you'll usually get one of many different questions. The first one being, if different planes were used, what happened to the original ones? Unfortunately, we may never know what really happened. But if we could examine the black boxes from the planes that were used, we could prove that they weren't the original flights. commercial plane carries two different black boxes. Each black box carries one of two different recorders, a cockpit voice recorder and a flight data recorder. The cockpit voice recorder records sounds from inside the cockpit, including engine noise, stall warnings, and other sounds of interest. Communications between air traffic control, weather briefings, and conversations between pilots and crew are also recorded. The flight data recorder records at least 28 different parameters, such as time, altitude, speed, and heading. Some also record more than 300 other in-flight characteristics, anything from autopilot to smoke alarms. The recorders themselves are made from the most impervious metals known to man, and the information is recorded along with date and time, and spooled into a continuous roll. Any damage that is done to the roll is done to the outside, as opposed to the inside where the data is. The 9/11 Commission says that CVRs and FDRs from American 11 and United 175 were not found. Yet, the FBI claims to have found the passport of Saddam al-Sakami, which managed to fly out of his pocket, through the explosion, and onto the streets of Manhattan below. So, four different black boxes, made from the most resilient materials known to man, were destroyed. Yet, a passport, made from a fragile material, known as paper, managed to survive? Who writes this stuff? Ted Lepatkiewicz, spokesman for the National Transportation Safety Board, told CBS News that it's extremely rare that we don't get the recorders back. I can't recall another domestic case in which we did not recover the recorders. Turns out Ted's right. Nicholas DeMassey, a firefighter who helped the recovery efforts, claims in the book Behind the Scenes, Ground Zero, "At one point, I was assigned to take federal agents around the site to search for the black boxes from the planes. There were a total of four black boxes. We found three." I guess it all comes down to who you'd rather believe.
What do you think? Do you think it's convincing what they tell in the film?
It's not so much what they say. It's the things that, you know, make you look at what you thought you saw in a different light. And those things for me that bother me is the hole in the Pentagon being too small for a plane, mm-hmm. the lawn isn't mussed up, and the government's not showing the plane hitting when many cameras photographed it. At the World Trade Center, three buildings came down like demolition, and two of them were hit by a plane, but the third one, they said, "Do you want us to pull it?" And they pulled it, and it looked just like the other two. Uh-huh. Those things bother me. In Pennsylvania, the plane that went down, it was just a hole in the ground. There wasn't any wreckage. There wasn't any skid marks. There wasn't any tear in the earth. And no one's ever really found out about that. So every place, there's questions coming from this documentary. And you don't have to believe everything in the documentary to still have questions come up. And you look back and you remember what you saw and what you were told, and now you have questions.
And the event itself, did it change your life, or did it change
No.
your view of...
Now it's just an event that has many questions and no answers.
And the suggestion that the American government is behind it?
What does it mean? It's too big for people to think about. It's too big.
What do you mean?
It's just, you know, it's like something no one wants to think about.
It's David Lynch. There is another Brass Check TV video that I guess probably won't quite relate, but I'll read the commentary. You'd again have to watch the video. It's patriot and researcher Indira Singh. Also, the site of, think of it in a minute, 8thestate.com, the number 8, 8thestate.com. And Richard Grove, yes, he was intimately a part of the scene. He was scheduled to be in a meeting on the 98th floor in the first building that was struck. Very interestingly enough, the people that were in that meeting were calling into question the theft of enormous sums of money that they witnessed was happening, because you don't just quite do this overnight. And they were the first ones to lose their life. Mr. Grove would have been there with them, but he was stuck in traffic, and he, along with a lot of other people, saw the buildings explode out of nowhere. He also witnessed on the ground vehicles that he knew were CIA due to his work with them, and that they were not engaged in rescue activities. But here's something following the money. How to read this. It says you have to, it's a disjointed program, you have to watch both videos, then do some homework on something called Promise and the Inslaw scandal. And they have links to videos for that. If you don't have time or are unwilling to put in the time, you're simply not going to understand what's being said here. The question is, how much do you care? The speaker, Indira Singh, is an expert on computer security, detecting fraud in complex financial systems, a former highly regarded executive with Morgan Stanley, and a former DARPA consultant with high security clearance. The broader context, 9/11 is the 21st century version of Iran-Contra. Singh digs deeper into the details than anyone else. It's the same people using the same methods. BCCI alumni, the CIA, the Bush family and their colleagues, drug dealers, arms traders, Arab royalty, Texas white-collar criminals, corrupt government officials, a totally supine news media, and law enforcement officials who are in over their heads. And they have a link to the same folks, what they were up to in the 80s. These very same people are involved in the impending land grab to build the Mexico-U.S.-Canada superhighway that's designed to obliterate U.S. sovereignty and, in my opinion, simply simplify massive natural resource extraction from a soon-to-be-bankrupt United States and Canada. Remember the massive instant wealth that was created by government insiders who brokered asset deals when the former Soviet Union collapsed. You ain't seen nothing yet. Ripping off the nation on a massive scale is as American as apple pie for certain noxious elements of American society. You've got to hand it to these people. They know how to plan ahead. They think big, and they're not afraid to steal and kill in broad daylight. Then again, with a news media like ours, why should they worry? And they have more links along that. Actually, it was reminding me of Jared Israel, the work of Jared Israel. And, of course, this was instantly, like the day, maybe the next day, and I think he probably still has a link to an interview he did maybe days afterwards. And basically his point was that what's happening is massive amounts of money is moving from ordinary people to very, very rich people. Of course, you can talk about all the gold bars that were taken out of the basements, the dump truck that was found still half full with the gold bars, hastily abandoned. You know, it's on and on and on. The story is just massive, and I think I've done pretty good over the past 6 years covering it, but, you know, whatever. And, again, this is for the truth. It is for the respect of the people that were murdered that day. The insanity of the story cannot be exaggerated. There is no truth in any part of it. I don't know, Brastrick TV. Actually, Andrew, who is recording this, thank you very much. I guess Ms. McKinney, she might call, but, you know, again, she had a very tragic loss in her family that was actually, we could say, murdered by our so-called healthcare profession. Her aunt was a very, very health-conscious individual, and she thought that she was told that she needed, it would be good for her to have a colonoscopy. So she went in for the colonoscopy, and unbeknownst to her, her colon was perforated. And the people that did it said, oh, just don't worry, just come back in a couple weeks, rest up, you'll be fine. Then it got to the point where she was, she had to go to the emergency room. Her injuries were patched up. She may have recovered, but in some form of insurance scam and argument, the original people that, and I don't mean any disrespect, but the original people that basically butchered her body demanded that she return to where this damage was first done. So in her intensive, from intensive care, she was moved to the original place of the damage that was done to her. And then they injected morphine into her at the against the protestations of her family. And they did this to her twice. And they killed her. She was murdered. And, you know, it's just amazing. one of the documentaries by Dr. Gary Null, drnull.com, I believe, is the site. Gary Null, just do a search on that. He's, of course, also bringing to light this insanity of vaccines and this nonsense, more government-sponsored terrorism, the H1N1, yeah, whatever. But he pointed out, Dr. Null pointed out, that in statistics for 27, where that 743,000 Americans were murdered by the healthcare profession, that had a little bit of common sense and stayed home and taken care of themselves, they would be alive. But, you know, whatever. Okay, well, maybe we'll just play some of this from Andrew. It says, now it's kind of a raw program. I had trouble getting through for some reason during the confirmation. Let's just see what's happening. This is with Dr. Wood, Andrew Johnson, and Hutchison. We did speak with a couple years back, and we had a bad connection. As I've always had technological problems, which, you know, whatever. But the point is, do research for yourself. Don't believe anyone. Look at it for yourself. And really, I have, I really do have sympathy for people that do not have, can't see for themselves these videos. When you watch the fake videos, it's undeniable. When you see the black blob coming through the building, and then the news media desperately trying to cover it up with a big banner the second time. And, of course, they're just doing what they do best, psychological warfare. Let's see. That's not working well. Maybe we'll get this or maybe we won't. It's a brand new link Andrew just sent to us. Okay. Raylan Allen. It was a radio program today. And is it going to work? I don't know if it's going to work. Actually, maybe we'll do go back to the house DJ for a little bit. And Morgan Freeman has an interesting Dr. Morgan Freeman has an interesting site, and I might try to find a program from his site. Oh, it doesn't look like it's working. They just did it today. Yes, one of the programs I think I played from Morgan's site, Morgan Freeman's site, is the I'm sorry, Morgan Reynolds, Dr. Reynolds, was a good talk with about the real Lincoln with Thomas J. DiLorenzo. Yes, the real Lincoln. What are we supposed to believe? Oh, Lincoln freed slaves. No, he didn't. He enslaved everyone else. Another thing is just checking the evidence. Plain and simple. Basically, all the history we're supposed to believe is a sick joke, and you are the butt of it. It's not funny at all. Well, I guess that's not going to play. I'll go back to House DJ and maybe try to find something from the Reynolds site. Okay. And hopefully some point we'll be able to speak with Ms. McKinney. Actually, you know, everyone I've brought that up with, they never heard of her. Never heard of her. She was on every ballot in this country for president. She was a candidate for president. She had very, should have been high profile, was high profile attempts to help the people of Gaza. Was not reported here in this Zionist terrorist controlled place. But yes, first, the ship she was on was rammed in international water. And they limped back to port. And then I think maybe about several weeks later they tried again. And these Zionist terrorists kidnapped them in international water, brought them to Israel. And this was a huge story that was not reported. Oh, just like the story, you can find this, Israeli Mossad agents in October of 01 were caught red-handed trying to blow up the Mexican Congress. Massive story all across Mexico, as it should have been, as it was. But did you hear about it in this country? No. The evidence is still there to check if you want. But it's rather painful if you haven't broached it already. But no, you can just believe the psyops, the carefully produced psyops. And even the people like Alex Jones, he's definitely part of it. Absolutely right there protecting the people up at the top. Because, you know, the people that have sense enough or, you know, care enough to look at, you know, all these anomalies, they go to him. But then, of course, he wants you to believe that planes hit buildings in New York. And if you look at these videos, just with an open mind, look at the videos, it shows that didn't happen. Remember Kenny Johannemann's testimony? Okay. Yes. I think we're going to have to go back to Legend and Mystery next week. Or at least Legend and Mystery that's not so deadly.
And we'll just go back to this.
Larisha and Sandy, what about LaTanya, LaRonda and her homegirl, Angie, don't forget about Ken, Denise, Latrice and Camisa, they like to drop it to the hop and got more backs than Serena, let me see what you shake, that big old thing, bend over there and touch the floor, and if your girl don't want to shake, well then you shake some more, just move your sexy body, girl you know you're naughty, they have to push from the club to the hotel lobby, so you can do it like you did on the floor, and give me all the groupie love, but you love below, get your back up off the wall, get up, dance, come on, get your back up off the wall, get up, dance, come
on. Earth and Sky.
It all started with frogs. Frogs are, I've been in love with frogs since I was a little kid, but they're excellent models for understanding things about the environment in general, and have led me to trying to understand some important aspects of public health and how the environment affects public health.
You're listening to biologist Tyrone Hayes, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Hayes spoke to Earth Sky's Lindsay Patterson about the connection between pesticides, frogs, and public health, and about what it means to speak out as a scientist.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you do? What's your process as a scientist?
Well, I'm a developmental endocrinologist. That means I'm interested in how hormones affect development. And in particular, I'm interested in how hormones are involved in amphibian development. And through that process, through that research process, I've become involved in looking at how chemical contaminants, especially pesticides, might interfere with hormones during development and affect wildlife. And that's also led me to look at how some of these pesticides cause hormone imbalances that may be related to prostate and breast cancer in humans.
Amphibians are on a wide decline around the world, and can you tell me what are some of the main reasons for this?
Well, it's well established that, and now I think nobody's arguing that there is a global amphibian decline. There are potentially many causes, and those causes might also vary from population to population or locality to locality or species to species. And my work, though, focuses on the role that pesticides play, and in particular how pesticides may interact with many of these other factors that we're examining.
And so what role do pesticides play?
Well, I think at least the pesticides that we've looked at, atrazine, for example, has a particular role in that it interferes with sex hormones so that male frogs don't have the male sex hormone testosterone that they need for reproduction. In some cases, male frogs actually become hermaphrodites. They have male and female sex organs, which renders them less functional or non-functional, so they're no longer a part of the population. But also, pesticide mixtures seem to cause increases in stress hormones, and these increases in stress hormones lower immune function and makes these animals more susceptible to diseases that are the ultimate causes of their death.
And so what does that mean? What's going on in the frog's environment? Can you tell me how do those chemicals get into the frogs?
Well, that's what makes frogs what makes them a vulnerable species or vulnerable group of species, and also what makes them ideal for study. They are aquatic, so many of the pesticides that end up in the water.
Okay, from your very own frog in the basement at Kennedy, I think we've got something from Dr. Morgan Reynolds' site. It is a radio program, and there is not too much. It's 2 years old, and hopefully it'll be interesting.
Okay, welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. This is your host, Kevin Barrett, doing this every Tuesday night right here on We the People Radio Network. And tonight I'm going to be delving into a very pernicious and disreputable topic among certain sensitive people in the 9/11 truth movement, but one that I really kind of enjoy myself. I'm going to be talking with a couple of pernicious and disreputable people who I also kind of enjoy. My guests tonight are going to be at the upcoming Science of 9/11 conference in Madison, Wisconsin.
Huh. Oh, God. I guess we have buffer issues. Yeah. Okay, well, sorry about that. I'm just going back to the house, DJ. Technology crashes once again. Well, here's a little piece of something. Oh, God, excerpts from Loose Change. What is this? No matter how often I look at this, it remains shocking. There is only one conclusion to draw from all this. There is no real news reporting in the U.S., I guess they had a bad file.
these egocentric NSA people who are screwing around with our telephone connections on this radio show. What happened here? Apparently all phone lines just went down. Oh, boy. Well, we've come back up. So let me pick up where I left off. I was just about to say that we have a couple of very fascinating guests on tonight. Folks, these guys are a little bit disreputable in certain quarters of the 9/11 truth movement. Why? Because they're out front with some cutting-edge research that is controversial, and that's why they're going to be at the upcoming Madison Scholars for 9/11 Truth Conference, which is entitled Science of 9/11, What's Controversial and What's Not. We're going to try to figure out exactly what we can all agree on, like Building 7 with a controlled demolition, duh, and what we can't. What's with the planes on 9/11? And, you know, this is a perfectly reasonable thing to do, I think. I think we need to get together and all, you know, do kind of a big high five on Building 7 and then hear each other out on these other research matters. It's really not a big deal. And I think that 9/11 truth activists really need to lighten up and let the researchers do their research and critique that we need to critique the research in a friendly and also rigorous way. And so that's why I'm having a couple of the most out there cutting edge researchers who have some of the best scientific credentials. Well, one of them does. The other has good economics credentials. And I'll start out with the first guest. He's a former Bush administration chief economist at the U.S. Department of Labor from 2001-2002. And after he quit, he rocked the world with some statements about the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center. And since then, he's been a big name in the 9/11 truth movement. That's, of course, Dr. Morgan Reynolds. Are you there, Morgan? Hello, Morgan. Well, maybe Morgan's not back up here yet. We're going to try to get him back up. Apparently, we had everybody on the phone lines, and then something happened. I hope I'm still on the air right now. I'd feel pretty silly if I were sitting here doing this and wasn't getting through the telephone line. Anyway, we are going to have Morgan Reynolds on. Morgan Reynolds is a professor emeritus of economics at Texas A&M University. He's a former chief economist at the U.S. Department of Labor, and he was the director of the Criminal Justice Center, as well as a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis in Dallas, Texas. Morgan has some pretty serious credentials, and so when he started talking about the demolition of the Trade Center, some folks probably didn't like that too much. But those of us who were already on it were overjoyed, and I've gotten to know Morgan a little bit, and I have to say I like you, Morgan. I don't care what you have to say about those planes hitting or not hitting the towers. I think you've done some good work, and I'm going to really be happy to see you when you come up to the Science of 9/11 conference in August. So, hey, welcome, Morgan.
Hey, good evening, Kevin. Hey, I like you, too, and the fact that you're in error on a few points, it's just between friends.
Yeah, well, that's the way it's got to be because, you know, this 9/11 thing is so outrageously complex. It's so multifaceted. There are so many different areas to look at that, you know, nobody really has time to at least to do activism and also to be up on every last aspect of this thing. So, you know, I'm willing to allow people to look into particular facets of 9/11 more closely than I have. And to speak their minds about what they're looking at. And I think that's the least we can do. And then, you know, have a dialogue aimed at, you know, critiquing people's research. And
well, yeah, let's look at the facts as best we can ascertain them.
And you certainly wrote a very good piece on the demolitions. That's one that has certainly withstood the test of time for just about everybody in the 9/11 truth movement. There are very few rejecting controlled demolition these days. And so when they go back and read your articles on that from a few years ago, they look pretty good. Even your bête noir Jim Hoffman admitted that most of what you had to say about controlled demolition was right on.
Yeah, and it didn't pretend to be original research so much as putting it together in plain language. And I think I'm a pretty good teacher as well as researcher, so. He was mostly bent out of shape with my suspicions about the plane stories, which I hadn't sorted out nearly as well as I have since. And, Kevin, just to reinforce your point about let's be, we can disagree, but we don't have to be disagreeable about it. We've got to work, make, as in physical science, you've got to make the world safe for error. Actually, some errors turn out to be very provocative and promote knowledge, the development of new knowledge. So our first resort, I would claim, should not be, oh, that guy's an op, or so-and-so's a troll, until you accumulate enough circumstantial evidence to prove it up.
Absolutely. You know, actually, the idea of productive error is something that was popular in postmodern literary theory when I was studying literature. And I think it's true. People need to be free to make mistakes and not, you know, not be, you know, raked over the coals. Especially, you know, with 9/11, we're faced with such a tangle of information that it's pretty hard to sort it all out. And, you know, I've read a fair bit of your stuff, including your essay in the new book, The 9/11 Conspiracy, The Scamming of America, which is edited by Jim Fetzer. And I think it passes the test as basically, you know, lucid analysis and writing. So, I really wonder about these folks who don't want to even come to a conference because somebody's coming there who has a controversial theory. Dave Von Kleist was supposed to come up to Vancouver, and then somebody there said, oh, we don't like this pods on the plane hitting the towers thing. So because of one person didn't like him, they didn't invite him.
Well,
and now
yeah.
Apparently Dave is kind of scratching his head about coming to be on the program with you, Morgan, because he thinks that his tweaking of the standard plane story is going to be, you know, is going to look crazy if it gets lumped together with your version of what may have happened with the plane. So why can't we all just get together and hash these things out,
right,
and agree to disagree?
I mean, hey, I'm, as you have, we're willing to go into the lion's den. There's, if you're secure in your approach, why not? Look at Hannity and Combs and O'Reilly. There you're not going to get a hearing, a word in edgewise, so you just got to go in and pound it and stay on message, right, and not let them trample you.
You know, David Ray Griffin, as a theologian, I think had some good insights on the sociology kind of the 9/11 truth movement. And he pointed out that in religious movements, people with different ideas sometimes get accused of heresy, and that these movements split apart into competing factions that angry at each other. And you know, we shouldn't be like a faith-based movement. With the 9/11 truth movement, we should be a little bit more, you know, rigorously analytical and yet convivial and collegial, don't you think?
Well, yeah, and secular disputes, be they scientific or political, at least in principle, are resolvable. And the truth will out long run. Most of us are very confident of that. Error often wins round one. It doesn't worry me. The truth has legs. If I'm peddling BS, it won't stand the test of time. Now, I claim on this planes, no planes issue, there were no planes in all four events that crashed, and I can prove it up. And it's funny that, you know, the burden is really not on me so much as the advocates. And if I can refute them with one fact, one fact that falsifies the theory is enough that you have to go back into the workshop and reformulate it. And the number one fact, and there are, I got dozens of them, is the paucity of debris at all four alleged crash sites.
You know, that's a good point.
These Boeings have about 3 million parts. And then there are their body parts, mail, lipstick, on and on and on. Where is this stuff? We're very familiar with airliner crashes, what it looks like. none of the four look like that at all.
Well, you know, David Griffin, again, made that point talking about the controversy about the Pentagon. He pointed out that when a tin can hits the wall and it squashes, the mass of the tin can is still there. So where is the evidence that 100 tons of aluminum right. and steel ever was taken out of the Pentagon.
Yeah, the Pentagon is the clearest case that is close to a consensus, and the facts are so compelling that there was no Flight 77. And I would go further. There wasn't any Sky Warrior A4 either, because the same facts refute that. And, you know, probably the two most important things that you could cite, top of the fact list refuting the official account, would be, number one, the gash is on the neighborhood of 16-foot diameter. How can that swallow a 125-foot width 757, and it's about 40 feet high?
Right.
So the gash is a problem. And then, to me, the next most important fact is, if you're going to contend that this plane, as officially, came in at over 500 miles an hour, you cannot land this type of aircraft. And that's what they're telling us. It landed at the first and second story, okay?
Right.
That's equivalent to, and there's not a mark on the lawn. You know, on and on.
Have you looked at the Pilots for 9/11 Truth work about the black box data?
Yeah. That, I guess that's helpful, but it's hard for an outsider to evaluate their work, right? You can't check on it. But what they are saying is that given this official flight path, it couldn't have knocked down the lamppost and it couldn't hit the building. Is that your...
That's exactly what they're saying, and that would suggest that there may have been some kind of overflight if this is indeed a real black box.
Yeah, one of the, you know, speaking of an overflight, one of the things that makes me maddest about that event is that it's acknowledged that this C-130 with Colonel Steve O'Brien in command overflew the Pentagon event, and then he's the same guy who was near Shanksville, and these some 19 or so of these C-130s are fixed all up with this these black box jamming and so on. And that guy, I was there in Washington D.C. of course on 9/11, and that guy, that lying guy, this really makes me mad for a military officer, said, "Oh, yeah, you really couldn't see because the East Coast haze was obstructing my view." Well, that's just an outrageous lie. That was the clearest day on the East Coast in the history of man, and everybody knows it.
So wait a second. Now, Steve O'Brien, you're saying he was piloting one of those C-130 airborne command
right.
and control planes. Now,
and
what's the evidence that he was doing that?
The military, it was widely reported, but they acknowledge it, that he was diverted. And so they fess up that he was there. And he said, "I just couldn't see the hit at the Pentagon," was his claim, "because of this haze." There was no haze.
Interesting, because, you know, that C-130, some people think that the official story conflates that C-130 is flying over D.C. with the flight path of the alleged 757. Okay, well, we're going to have to take a break here, but we'll be back with Morgan Reynolds and hopefully his co-author, Rick Ratcher, in a few moments. Stay tuned.
Times are tough.
All stagnant pond water.
Like Cardivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories. Concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
Okay, let's not tolerate any outrageous conspiracy theories like that 19 hijackers and led by a guy on dialysis in a cave in Afghanistan legend that they tried to sell us. Let's talk about the more commonsensical ones like TV fakery and no planes flying into the World Trade Center. Whoa,
Let's not go there. Well, actually, maybe we are going to go there tonight because my guests tonight right here on 911 Empire Radio are Morgan Reynolds and Rick Ratcher, and they've raised a little bit of controversy around those issues, and I see no harm in talking about them. Hey, I hear Rick is on the line. So, Rick.
Should be. Do you hear me?
Yeah, how are you doing?
Oh, sweet. I was beginning to think I was in a protective box over here.
Sorry about that. We had a little technical difficulties there at the beginning of the show where the phone lines all apparently disappeared at one point, but they're back.
No worries. I'm here now.
All right. So, enjoyed your piece. You guys are the joint authors of an article called Some Holes in the Plane Stories, which is in the book The 9/11 Conspiracy, The Scamming of America, and it's by Jim Fetzer. And I think that's an interesting line of argument to argue that essentially all four alleged plane crashes have little or no evidence to support them, and apparently a fair bit of evidence that they didn't happen the way we're told they did. In a way, it kind of simplifies things to see them all in that same light, whereas a lot of people in the 9/11 truth movement seem to admit the doubts about the plane crashes in Washington and Shanksville, but they don't have so many doubts about the crashes in the World Trade Center. So maybe we just start off here. I guess I could just ask you, Morgan, how did you first get off on this tangent of the questions about the alleged plane crashes into the World Trade Center?
When I did this article that caught some attention June 9th, it appeared on Lou Rockwell, a libertarian website, back in June of 2005, I explained that let's put everything aside that we supposedly know and look at the evidence from scratch. And I hadn't figured out the planes, but a number of things looked suspicious. I didn't trust the plane stories, especially at the World Trade Center. And I didn't know that much. I actually reviewed that recently, and I had a link to the Web Theory, but I didn't know about Gerard Holmgren, etc. So I just, and Jim Hoffman jumped on me, and about the first third of the article, because that was the chronology, you know. First of all, we see these gashes and explosions in the towers. Well, what caused them? I wasn't going to accept anything without a strong evidential basis. So I raised these questions. I didn't say there were no planes because I hadn't reached that conclusion. And then I went on to, if you will, prove or reprove, reword the demolitions, the inside job nature that was irrefutable. And about that time, that summer, it used to be verboten to talk about this. For example, Mike Rupert was one of those who said, you know, you don't ever talk about physical evidence because it's just disputed. It's one expert versus the other. And about this time, a few months later, I'm not taking credit. Some people say I'm an op because, anyway, the consensus kind of congealed. You know, you can't figure out how these things are, but enough years had gone into this and enough evidence that it just became, oh, yeah, everybody takes it for granted, right?
That's really interesting because, when Rupert said that, he had a lot of influence at that point, and I think it really slowed things down because the demolitions are really pretty darn obvious, especially Building 7. It's one of those things you can see with your own eyes, and, you know, when people see Building 7 coming down, they often rethink their whole approach to 9/11. So I think Rupert was very counterproductive in urging people not to look at that.
Your intro had Ace Baker as my favorite 9/11 song, Blown to Kingdom Come. You know, if only because I'm known for the phrase applied to this case, but it's based on a Daryl Worley country song.
Yeah, you know, I tried to popularize that phrase. I thought it was it had legs, and so anyway,
well, you were the one who coined the "come on out from the White House with your hands up."
Yeah, I thought that was a good summary of your talk in Madison, which was basically sort of a prosecutorial brief against the administration that you used to work for.
Right,
but Kevin, that was an important point that you brought up earlier, though, about the consensus of the trade centers becoming more popular around 2005, because for the first 4 years, you weren't really allowed to at these conferences to talk about even the controversial controlled demolition. But now, you know, if you're not talking, you know, controlled demolition, you're off. So it's like truth by democracy within a movement we got going on right now.
Yeah, and I think we do need to ease up on that. And it's, I think part of the problem is that the kind of the sociology of this has become sort of like a religious movement. You know, when people
right.
see the world in a totally different way from the other people around them, which happens when, you know, when people like, you know, suddenly get turned on to cosmic truth by some, you know, a guru or prophet or something, you know, then they wander around following that person and there's a whole sociology that happens where you have to be absolutely right about everything. It's kind of a, you know, if you're wrong about your this, you're a heretic. And that kind of mentality seems to me to really, you know, be kind of infesting the 9/11 truth movement. And we need to kind of relax and not be quite so dogmatic about
something. Hey, Kevin, let me take the other side of that, though, because this is not for sure entirely unfounded, and that is the perpetrators had years to plan this, and they would plan for the post 9/11, and you would certainly, although they've got control of the influential media, the corporate media, that's not enough in the internet age and or alternative radio. So they would put people in place to lead the new 9/11 truth movement. It's only logical. I'm not saying I can go to court with this, but we've got to realize that some people actually are operatives. It's not just the kind of the NSA key pounders on forums who are like they never read a Reynolds article or a Judy Wood article or Rick Ryder, but you know, they're tarring and feathering these people. So hey, there are ops out there.
Well, it may very well be the case, but I think we really don't need to waste our time worrying about them because I think there's a limited amount of damage that can be done by people like that. And, you know, number one, how competent a person can they get to play that role? That is, you know,
it depends on the pay.
Right, right. Okay, so we should probably be checking people coming to 9/11 truth conferences, you know, dressed in, you know, alligator shoes and, you know, wearing, you know, diamond jewelry.
Wearing a fedora.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I mean, to go back to that, though, I mean, at least for the first few years at these conferences, they would not let certain people talk about controlled demolition at these conferences. Nico Hawk was a big one, where they actually threw him out of his own conference. So it doesn't take much, because all you got to do is have pressure from the people running the conference to not let that type of information in, and it's a way you control the information. So, you know, the people at the cutting edge who were talking about controlled demolition in 2002 to 2004 were stifled by these people in the movement. And so we're kind of facing a similar type of
history. Rick repeats itself on the no planes front, because Judy and I think under not entirely open, fair circumstances, got invited up to Seattle in October. And supposedly the 9/11 movement up there is in disarray or fractured since our talk. But Judy and I have not been invited anywhere. So, for example, hey, our names come up, or our quote, you know, space beam theories, or rabid no planers come up at Vancouver or out in Chandler, Arizona, but we're not there.
Well, you're the bad boys and girls of the movement,
boys.
I guess. Anyway, we'll be back doing some more talk with the bad boys in just a few moments. This is Kevin Barrett right here on 9/11 and Empire Radio. Stay tuned.
Times are. Sometimes it seems. Brown and put their.
Blood clots in the crude oil that went through his veins and up through his brain. It's tough to maintain. If he was low income, he'd already been gone. Insurance paperwork getting handled by Enron.
Okay, we're back. Yes, that's right. We're back with the bad boys. Martin Reynolds and Rick Ryder at, 9/11 and Empire Radio. This is your host, Kevin Barrett, doing this every Tuesday night, and I'm still a free speech guy, so I'm not interested in trying to ignore interesting, provocative, and controversial ideas about September 11th. My own are considered that in some quarters. So we're talking about the evidence that the plane crashes that supposedly happened on September 11th don't seem to have a whole lot of evidence for them, and there seems to be a fair bit of evidence against them. Well, you know, one thing that comes up when people consider this idea, Morgan and Rick, is that they would say that, you know, the perps in this instance would probably want to, you know, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. That is, they wouldn't want to be using a lot of unproven, relatively untested, you know, high technology stuff. I mean, you'd think that they would want to go with what was tried and true, because it's already going to be complicated enough. And according to this one line of argument, the simplest thing to do would be simply fly these planes into their targets by remote control rather than engaging in fancy plane substitutions or God knows what other kind of, you know, crazy hijinks to create the illusions of plane crashes when there were none. So why, you know, why do you think that, since you seem to believe the perps did not, use, big Boeings, why not? Wouldn't it have been a lot easier to do that?
Well, let me, respond first and then Rick, you chime in, they actually did follow KISS with this. There's way too many problems using real airliners. Too many things can go wrong. For example, suppose you miss the building. John Lear was on the pilots, the 9/11 Truth, and the host chimed in with there were a couple of experienced airliner pilots on simulators that. Morning of 9/11, and they both tried to hit a tower at 500 miles an hour, and they couldn't do it. Much less these inexperienced alleged Arab hijackers. But the perps knew what the physics of this were, where you have an aluminum tin can basically with a couple of motors. What the building, a heavy steel building, is going to do to this? It's going to chew the butt. It's going to crush, crumple, torque that plane to nowhere. Yeah, I've looked at a lot of these crash. There aren't that many, actually, a couple dozen maybe, crash videos for aircraft. And you go in, you know, the way I like to put it is I've got a sledgehammer in the basement here, 9.5 pounds. You put me up on a Boeing 767 or 757 for 15 minutes, it will be unflyable. 9.5 pounds of steel. You know how many, when I flew up to Seattle, I was on a 767, and I was over the wing. I was watching, it, as we approached the airport, it, quite a ballet of actuators, you know, moving flaps and panels. And all over the wing are markings, no step, no step. In other words, a 200-pound man can go up there and create some damage walking on that wing, okay? So these planes, you know, they don't have any crash ratings, do they, Kevin? So they, and, you know, the ace in the hole for doing this way, it this way, is they have control of the media. They can psyop you to death by claiming this is real and do a video fakery, do an insert. Rick?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with the keeping it simple. It's much easier to, you know, if you had to put some maybe shake charges into the wall, or, you know, if you believe the thermite hypothesis or any bombs in the building or whatever, they could already have that in place to make any cutouts they need. And FEMA was there the day before to do simulations of things running into the tower, so they could put fake blips on all the monitors, and they could already have the video edited out. And again, yeah, to get a real plane and have that much accuracy, again, if the plane nose, like, missed the corner, right, and only a wing hit the building, you know, and if the building fell after that, first of all, you have two problems. You would have to explain how just a wing hit in the building could cause it to collapse. That would be, you know, absurd.
Right.
And then you'd have the plane landing in some other place in Manhattan and, you know, doing all sorts of other damage. And so They didn't want that at all. So it's much, much easier to just do, you know, it sounds crazy at first sight, but when you really think of how simple it would be to, you know, fake it, it's actually so much easier. You don't have to deal with insurance. You don't have to deal with stealing a plane from American Airlines and having to like deal with them and all this stuff.
Right.
So
yeah.
there's a lot of pluses and simplifications that go about with no plane.
Yeah.
Well, yes and no.
Problems
too.
They have to tie the airline penetration, quote unquote, and the subsequent destruction of both towers, which are awesomely strong. And it wouldn't do much good to run a Boeing in and watch it crumple and fall to the ground below, most of it. Now, an engine, it's true. If it didn't hit a floor, you know, if it were just right, could conceivably go right through a tower. But that's very improbable. It happened in 1945 with that B-24. But you got to hit it just right. Otherwise, the floor, much less the core, is going to stop all that stuff. So it would look pathetic to run what a plane would really do running in there. And you wouldn't have it all set up for the subsequent destruction, which supposedly was due to fires and weakening of the structure.
And Kevin, remember that even if it was remote controlled, if there was a real plane and if there was people on board, you know, if the plane was overtaken and you know, the people on board knew it was flying towards a tower or whatever, who's to say they couldn't just destroy it en route or whatever and have it, you know, crash the plane like, you know, allegedly that was what happened in Shanksville with the electoral crap. So, again, you know, you add so many variables at what could cause this to fail along the way.
Well, here's
having real planes.
Here's another problem you're moving toward, Rick, and that is there is...
WSHT Shepherdstown, interviews 29 for the 11th of September. Just a little bit, it got started late, so there's a little bit left of this. And I guess I don't know if Super Lucy's coming in. They may very well, but anyway. And of course, no intention to suggest that the Shepherd University Board of Governors is responsible for this program.
There is no stand-down order. Nobody will ever find a valid stand-down order. There are too many patriots in the military. There's too much a defense that is decentralized. It's not true that Rumsfeld would have to sign off on an airliner intercept, etc. So there's way too many complications just in terms of an air defense.
Well, it does seem as though there was a kind of a procedure that led to in effect a stand down order.
Plane simplifies all that. there's nothing to intercept.
Wait a minute, Morgan. If there are, air fighters flying around trying to intercept what they think is a hijacking, you know, because we did apparently, you know, the FAA people talk about, you know, the various notifications.
They never intercepted anything. And, of course...
But if they were flying around looking for something and there was nothing there, if they're patriots, like you say, wouldn't they tell us that?
Well, there's a good question. Would they tell us that? Why don't we have an insider come forward with the truth? Yeah, here's my answer. You know, we were also happy, for example, when Stephen Jones first stepped forward. He was the only tenured university physicist that was going to question the official story. Well, look at what we've got here in terms of the science and engineering community. It's an absolute, we might as well have the Soviet Union in terms of the government having them all in its hip pocket for various reasons that amount to its career suicide to challenge the government on something this crucial.
And yet there are more and more scientists who are doing that, as well as architects and engineers. There's that new group, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And, of course, people in other nations have perhaps less to fear from the U.S. government. So there's really, there's no reason why this blackout in the scientific community should hold forever.
A bad performance so far. Go ahead, Rick.
But Kevin, there really is, though, because are you going to get NSF grants and DOD grants if you're a 9/11 truth person? No. So... You know, it's career suicide. You basically might as well throw your funding out the door, you know, tell your grad students you can't pay for them anymore and forget being invited to talks or getting papers published. So, yeah, there may not be an official you're kicked out the door and fired, but you're really going to severely hamper a career. And all these professors, remember, they had to get PhDs, they had to put a lot of money on the line, they put years of work on this to build what they are, and, you know, they have a comfortable life. They're not going to...
Well, I know that from hard personal experience, because the engineering school at the University of Wisconsin lost at least $500,000 because I was not fired there last year. So anyway, we'll come back and pick this up where we left off. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Rick Ryder and Morgan Reynolds right here on We the People Radio Network. Stay with us.
Potassium.
Barley grass.
AM to 11 a.m.
It was a beautiful September morning. Now everyone remembers that date. World Trade Center worker William Rodriguez. Lucky to be coming in late.
World Trade Center worker William Rodriguez is now touring the UK, I believe. He's running around Europe talking to good-sized crowds. I believe he filled up the largest mosque in the UK not too long ago. So, hey, keep at it, Willie. And all right, well, William Rodriguez, of course, did witness explosions in the North Tower immediately before the alleged airplane impact, as well as afterwards. And we do have all sorts of eyewitness, ear witness testimony for these explosions in the Twin Towers and also Building 7. And we now have new testimony from a witness who tells us that a massive explosion killed many people. And it was apparently pre-demolition work went off while the towers were still standing somewhere after 9 in the morning. So, guys, let's face it, there were some explosions, right?
If you look at Rick Siegel's 9/11 eyewitness, sure. There's overwhelming evidence. That I don't think is questioned by anyone that there are these explosions going on.
But, I guess, Morgan, you've been identified with this argument that some kind of high-energy weapon may have contributed to the destruction of the towers. And this is where it seems to me that there's kind of a, it's not an either-or, but it's a both-and. And it seems to me that Stephen Jones' arguments are actually stronger than you give him credit for, in that the evidence for these conventional explosives and for thermite seems to be quite strong, and of course that doesn't rule out the possibility that something else might have been used as well. So what's the fight about there? Is this all making a mountain out of a molehill?
Oh no, I've helped Dr. Judy Wood, who's a PhD in engineering, in what I call the dissertation project, which is still not finalized, but there is evidence that is overwhelming that something unconventional, call it outrageous, Kevin. You know, when George W. Bush addressed the United Nations in October of 2001 and says, let us not entertain outrageous conspiracy theories, what he's telling us is we did it an outrageous way. Now, what kind of evidence? Well, I knew about these, basically these 24-foot diameter holes drilled in the outbuildings of WTC, buildings 4, 5, and 6 in particular. But nobody had an explanation for it. And of course, I think it was done by a directed energy weapon. That's what you're left with, ultimately. Then we have, of course, these some 1,400 toasted cars, some of them, toasted in very odd ways. And of course, there's evidence that we've used these directed energy weapons in Iraq. So, in fact, somebody claimed, now I know who it is, that we might have even, this is giving us too much influence, perhaps, but that they could take out certain facilities in Iran if they wanted to, with directed energy weapons. They've been working on these things, of course, for decades. We all know about microwaves and laser beams, right? Well, is that where it ends? You know, they had the laser in the mid-1950s. So, and then there's this whole problem. If you go to our long paper, I don't see how any fair-minded person can look at all the evidence that Judy and with my help has assembled and not entertain this idea and find it compelling, in fact. You know about the bathtub, for example. You cannot have a half a million tons of debris falling on this bathtub and hope to keep the Hudson River at bay. They took all this into account. So that what they basically did was, in effect, disappear the upper 80% plus of each tower. You know where all that dust came from, Kevin? All those nanoparticles, 1 inch and more thick throughout the south of the island of Manhattan? What is that? That's a tower.
Well, that's right. There's the argument that if you packed enough firepower with conventional explosives, you could get a similar result. At least that's the argument I've heard.
Well, right. It just takes you a lot more, and you have to basically have it placed throughout the entire building where, you know, whether you look at the directed energy approach, as some people advocate, and there's other people that advocate mini nukes or whatever, whatever particular exotic weapon you look at, you need less of it, which is a plus, and it's easier to get in, which is a plus. So,
right. The question would be also, has this been tested as a way to demolish large steel buildings in the past? Because you would, as I said, you know, with KISS, you would expect that the perps would do stuff that's reasonably tried and true, that they know is going to work. Because if it, you know, if it really goes wrong, they're kind of stuck holding
the bag.
Well,
you know, they did learn on the job. That's why they did the South Tower first. We explained that. You know, the top 300 feet plus, they actually had a tilt against the opening, which is contrary to what you'd otherwise expect, right? You know, they should have.
Yeah, that's pretty odd, isn't it?
yeah. But if you look at the layout, Judy explains this because they're going to do building four anyway. So you tilt it there, and of course, then they pulverized it. Even Jones, Professor Jones, remarks that, well, gee whiz, I don't know. It never did come down that way. fall on building four.
He admits that's a mystery.
It's not a mystery if you were to use some external directed energy weapon. Now, we actually get criticized for not having the serial numbers from the parts of this weapon. Well, we're not privy to the technology they have, but we have, like, I don't know, 8-9 pages of proof that they've got directed energy weapons. So
well,
what they learned in 30 minutes about doing the South Tower, which was in a sense a little sloppier, they had to do this safe way. The North Tower was a bit neater, although they had, of course, some of the core was very stubborn, the so-called spire, which then dissociates it. It's steel turning to dust. People deny this, even though the video and photographic evidence is overwhelming, that they turn. There's not enough debris at the bottom, Kevin. You didn't walk up 10 stories on a debris pile, you know.
Right. It's clearly not a conventional controlled demolition that uses gravity to bring down the building. It's obviously being blown to kingdom come.
Nanoparticles. They dissociated the stuff. It wasn't just the concrete. You know, in a conventional demolition, of course, you'd have all the material broken up at the bottom. And you didn't have any of this reinforced steel down there.
Right. And that means that there were, there's a lot more explosive, destructive energy being unleashed than you would have in a normal demolition.
Mm-hmm.
And that does raise the question of the source of the energy.
It unravels material that shouldn't unravel in an ordinary explosive.
Right. Well, the question is, you know, what do you really gain by pushing this? You know, there are some people, like I know Professor A.K. Dudney, man for whom I have a fair bit of respect. You know, he did state this in a perhaps unfortunate terms by saying that, well, even if I did have proof that there were, you know, no planes hit the towers, I wouldn't be talking about it in public. Well, that's obviously going a little too far. But there is also, you know,
way too far for me.
Well, me too. But also there's some merit to the Steve Jones position, which is, look, if I can prove, that conventional explosives or thermite were used, if I can prove that up, I've got, you know, chemical tests here proving that they were used. I've got proof of arson. We take that into court and we go out, you know.
Here's your problem. Double jeopardy. You only get one bite of the apple when you're prosecuting people. And Stephen Jones admits thermite is not an insider type product or even super duper thermite. You can get it on eBay.
To set up the demolition with it, of course, huh? you have to be an insider to set up the demolition.
Thermite has never been used in a building demolition. It's a steel cutter, you know.
Right, but he's just saying it's part of the story, though. He's not saying it's the whole story.
Well, it's a limited hangout. That's the bottom line.
I don't agree. I think if he can prove up the thermite, then you can, you know, get a prosecutor and bring him in there and grill him
the real kicker here is there's two reasons why, if we're right, which of course I am, directed energy weapons are important. Number one, it's the truth. That's important on its own. I got my PhD based on that kind of noble idea, and I still hold it. Number
truth will
two,
set you free, says the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah, hey, sifting and winnowing.
That's
but
right.
Number two, only the United States military could have done it this way. In other words, there's no whiffle-waffling about who did it.
We know who
did it.
Right, but I'd say we're already long past the point of whiffling and waffling about that. We know that this was an inside job by people who had access to the special forces type units of the military and so on and so forth.
Kevin,
so,
I cannot be that cavalier because I want a prosecution, as you well know. And you don't go to court with the weak stuff. You got to go with the strong stuff.
Well, I agree with that. And that's why we need a free and fair debate to find out what exactly is the strong stuff. And that's what we'll be doing in our upcoming conference in Madison, Wisconsin, August 3rd to 5th. Stay with us. We'll be back for more in just a few minutes.
The Bill of Rights.